Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Welcome back to the College Ball Show. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss the greatest regular season sport of all time, college football. Of course, that's what I'm talking about. We could talk about what happens, you know, at the end of the season and rankings and all that, but the regular season clearly is the best. I like to just reiterate that. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Like I said, we got a variety of things to talk about, obviously. Right. If you're listening to the podcast, you know exactly what we're going to talk about. We got a big, big, big weekend coming up. LSU, Bama, Penn State, Minnesota. That's right. Penn State, Minnesota. Sounds weird being, you know, from Minnesota, obviously. We have Wisconsin and Iowa as well. There's a variety of games. Those are the marquee matchups. Obviously, the marquee matchup is LSU and Bama. In fact, I believe the last time number one against number two met during the regular season was, drum roll please, Alabama and LSU back in 2011. I believe it was 9-6, if I remember correctly. But like I said, we do have a variety of things to talk about, not just this weekend. We're obviously pumped for this big weekend. I don't think there, what's the stat? There hasn't been this late in the season, I believe past week 10 or week 11, where four unbeaten teams all are going to play each other. So in that matchup of two, I guess you could say, two different games of unbeaten teams, if that makes sense to you. So that's kind of cool. It's just fun. It definitely is like the highlight of the regular season. But, you know, before we get there, we will talk about week 10. Georgia got a big win over Florida. Utah outlast Washington on the road. Memphis and SMU put up a bunch of points, and Memphis came out ahead. We had a lot of, like, outstanding individual achievements. I guess you could say collectively, too, like an offense, some rushing yard stats where you're just like, are you serious? And just stats in general that kind of blow you away. So there is a variety of, like I said, items to touch upon. When it comes to week 10, we will be, you know, on the podcast, College Ball Show, we do talk the betting lines. We call it betting lines banter, where we pick an upset of the week, where we go against the spread. We may make a prediction with the spread. We may say, hey, this right here is going to be a barn burner. This game, we call it hardcore barn burners. It's probably going to be a good game, something to look at the fourth quarter. We got some take it to the windows where we're like, listen, this is easy money. Take it to the window. So we preview, we predict, we talk betting lines, gambling, all that good stuff. And then we wrap up the show with one item. We've been doing it for, I think this is our third year, maybe our fourth year. I think it's our third year. Can't totally remember, but it's called the Crafty Crappy Pick of the Week. Okay. Basically my co-host Marshall just throws a game at me and I got to pick it just blindly. I mean, I check out the stats really quick while we're doing it, and I kind of have fun with it, but it's been a pretty successful, 6-3 going into this week, so it's been pretty good at getting you some money. Anyway, before we get into LSU and Bama, before we get into any kind of week 10 recap, that Georgia-Florida game, before we get any of this, I do want to remind you, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, It can be found under the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast everywhere. It streams live right here at blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. So you can, you know, like I said, it archives here, it streams live. But you can find it at iTunes and Spreaker and Stitcher, TuneIn, and all sorts of places. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network that can be found everywhere, including iHeartRadio. In fact, through Siri or Alexa, you can use Spotify or TuneIn to find the show. While you're at it, head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu. That's betnow.eu, TGT promo code. That's TGT promo code, as in the Grueling Truth. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have and you're not happy with the fall schedule, there's a lot of sports. You probably need some sort of basic cable package. I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's streaming cable, basically. Okay, they have a 7-day free trial. There's no annual contracts. However, the plans start as low as $50, even if you did it for the next couple of months during football. It's HBO is included. Like I said, you can stream it anywhere. It has the cloud DVR. I do it myself, actually. AT&T TV Now. All right, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall, and check his temperature, see how he's doing on a fine Monday like this. The last time we talked about him, he follows the Washington Nationals. And last time we talked to him, they hadn't won the championship yet. So I figure that's going to be, you know, one of the early things he's going to talk about. But how are you, my friend? How the hell are you, buddy?
I'm good, and I actually might be switching over to the AT&T Now that you just mentioned. I've had DirecTV for a long time, but I called and was given a great discount for the Sunday ticket, and then that was never given on my bill, and the company refuses to acknowledge it. So I think I'm going to call your promotion and join AT&T Now, because I don't like being called a liar, especially in the customer service business. But besides that, I'm actually my hand's a little beat up, Chris. I was watching Game 7 of the World Series. We were lucky to win Game 6.
And I was
watching the game, and my girlfriend and her kid was over, and her kid's like 15 months, so he's never seen me quite go crazy. And as Howie Kendrick hit the home run to take the lead in the seventh inning, I jumped off my living room couch and did a fist pump, and actually busted like one of the parts of my fan, like one of the legs on the fan. And kind of grew my hand up pretty good.
So on the ceiling fan, you're saying?
Yeah, on the ceiling fan, I jumped up and busted the...
Okay.
The poor little guy wasn't sure what was happening. My hand was sore. My girlfriend thought I was nuts, but I was like, yeah, you know, no, I'm good. I just saw a guy hit a go-ahead home run in the World Series. So it's been an emotional time. The hand is slowly healing, but that is okay to see a team you love win a title. So a little bit crazy. A beat-up hand, but well worth it for a sports fan like you and I are to see your team win championships, which you know is rare. It was pretty enjoyable. But besides that, I did watch some college football this weekend. You know, we don't really talk about it much, but, you know, College Game Day, it's the ESPN pregame show that's like a 2.5-hour show. It's a huge deal. And this week they went to Memphis, and I've always kind of liked them just for a couple of people that do the radio work for them or their TV shows. I've always kind of liked the Memphis sports, and they had like the whole – they picked Memphis for this week because that's like the first time they've ever had game day. They were playing SMU. That's a game we'll get to. But, man, they lined up like Beale Street, and it was just like when they zoomed in to Memphis as the show started, like you just saw people and people and people. It was a pretty cool environment. I know, you know, where I went to college also is pretty lucky. NDSU, you know, they've been the FCS team that's won for quite a few times. Game Day's actually returned there because they went so well the first time in the Fargo. So, you know, if you are a college football fan and you don't watch it, it is kind of fun to watch Game Day every once in a while. They kind of do a fun little preview. Those guys are some characters. They interview people from the team and the city. It was kind of fun. But I just thought the Memphis – you would have thought that place was going nuts at 9 a.m., I guess, on like a 32-degree day in Memphis. So I'm feeling pretty good, brother. I'm in a good, happy mood. We don't have to teach the kids tomorrow. It's like a school meeting day for teachers, so no teaching tomorrow. So life is fine, and I'll throw it back to you.
Well, I mean, you know, that's always nice. You don't have to teach. You just do some, what is it, meetings or something?
Yeah, just
teacher meeting.
Get better at work. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Yeah, man. It definitely. You know, as far as the World Series go, it's always fun to see, you know, the series go to Game 6 and Game 7. So I definitely was paying attention, no doubt about it. And, you know, just kind of as a casual fan, just watching from afar and whatnot. But on to college football, and we do have a fair amount to talk about, no doubt about it. We will get into first and foremost – well, I shouldn't say first and foremost, but at least first. We will, you know, start the show with a little bit of recap. Then we'll get into this number one LSU, number two Alabama, Penn State, number five, number 13 Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, a variety of other, you know, games that are probably flying under the radar or have some against the spread type of stuff going for it. But yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to this week. And like I said, to have two set, you know, to have two different games that have four unbeaten teams. Like I said, I don't believe, as far as the poll goes, the modern day, I guess you could say, poll era, that I think it was like 34, 35, 33, somewhere in there, 1933, 1935 is when it kicked in, for the polls anyway, associated polls and all that. But man, I gotta say, I'm really excited for this, man. This is gonna be a fun weekend. Like I said, it's funny. The last time we got 1-2 was Bama and LSU, and here we are again. I do remember that 9-6 game though, with LSU got screwed in the national championship. It's like the first time ever someone had to have a rematch with a team, especially a team like Bama, and let Saban have, you know, 4 weeks or 5 weeks in that old system. To just, you know, just break it down. But anyway, we'll definitely get into that. We will want to start, though, with Week 10 recap. We did have some ranked teams go down. Obviously, when you go ranked against ranked, you're going to have some teams lose. So obviously, Florida lost Georgia and Florida. Georgia came out and just played better than them. It was a tight enough game, though, for Florida to win. But Georgia really put it together, 24-17. Like I mentioned, Utah on the road got a big win over Washington after being down. Shouldn't say big win, like Washington is some top-tier program this year, but it's still a big win any time you can do that. And like I said, Memphis and SMU, 54-84. So there's a variety of games that we're going to, you know, Appalachian State, I think they had 13 in a row. I think it was the second or third longest streak. I think it was the second longest streak, something like that. They got beat by Georgia Southern. Baylor almost got beat Thursday night.
Yeah.
By West Virginia. That was a really close one. But let's start with the top two marquee matchups. We'll start, of course, with Georgia and Florida. And then we'll talk a little Memphis SMU, because, like I said, that was another unbeaten team in SMU that, you know, went down swinging. What'd you think of this win by Georgia over Florida? It seemed like I said that they kind of put it together. Fromm played really good. They were able to run the ball effective enough. Lawrence Cager, former Miami Cane, did pretty well. I don't think he caught that ball that they reviewed and gave to him, but, you know, that really turned some momentum around, or added momentum, I guess you could say, because they scored the next play after that. So that's something we can, you know, break down, obviously. But I think the big thing was, you know, 19 carries for 21 yards overall, 1.1. And the longest run was 9. And I'm speaking about the Florida running game, which we knew they've passed better, but they just couldn't get it going. And on the other side, like I said, it was kind of a mix of pass and run. And Fromm just, you know, had a damn good day. What did you think of this game? And then, like I said, I'll give you a little take on the SMU Memphis game, too, because, like I said, that was one of the primetime games of the week, too.
Yeah, you know, in the NFL nowadays, like, the running game isn't quite what it used to be, and, like, not as many teams run the ball as much anymore in the NFL. But in college football, normally, if you still look at the running game, that can only kind of tell you who's going to win. So let's just say we were to look at the box score and see not the scoreboard, to say, hey, the team ran the ball how many times for how many yards, you know. And if you see Florida ran the ball 19 times for 21 yards, okay, that's a pretty bad number right there. And it tells you that, you know, they clearly didn't have the ball that much. Like, 19 carries isn't that many. I guess that's maybe a little misguided because the quarterback was sacked for 22 yards. I'm not sure how that goes for whether that was like a fumble or whatnot anyways. But Georgia was 37 for 119. So, again, not a stellar average, but it shows they ran the ball double the times Florida did, and they had a lot more of the yards. So that alone kind of tells you, hey, Georgia had time of possession. They were able to run the ball a little more effectively. Like, they had some type of rhythm to offense. And, I mean, that just kind of summarizes it up. I think the scoreboard is a little deceiving, too. This game was 16-3 through three quarters. So clearly Florida at home just couldn't find their offense, Chris. I mean, when you score 3 points at home in three quarters, I know Georgia's a good team. I'm not denying that. But, like, something wasn't going at all. Like, you couldn't run. I mean, your quarterback was 21-33 for passing, which isn't bad. I mean, that's respectable. But I'm guessing quite a bit of that is, you know, you're just trying to chuck the ball down the field to try to, you know, you're probably in, you know, catch-up territory, and Georgia's probably playing some type of soft zone. So, yeah, Florida's offense just couldn't get going. Now, to their credit, you know, a Gator fan could say, man, if we had Felipe Franks, maybe a different story. But, I mean, this Trask has come in and played really well for a guy that hasn't played football for, like, the past 7 years. Because he rode the bench in high school and never played behind Derek King, the former Houston quarterback. Now he's kind of rode the bench for 3 years in Florida. So for a dude that's been about 7 years cold, he's played pretty good. But I think the offense struggled a little bit. And as you mentioned, Fromm was kind of due for a good game. Fromm cost his team the game, or was a large reason they lost against South Carolina. I know the rain was bad, but the Fromm had trouble scoring against Kentucky until the later parts of that game. So I think Georgia's offense was kind of due for a little bit of a breakout. And, yeah, just controlling the line of scrimmage is huge. And obviously Georgia did that. Their quarterback didn't, you know, crap the bed. And that leads them to a win. You know, that's kind of their success. I think if Georgia can run the ball 30 to 40 times a game, that's keeping the ball in their hands and letting Fromm do the basics, Chris, not trying to, you know, sling the ball, you know, necessarily like a Joe Burrow or a Tua would. You know, their offense is quite a bit different, yet still effective when the run game is clicking.
Yeah, and they were going to Pitts early, that tight end who's a really solid player. I think once they got up, 10-3, it was kind of like, it was right after that touchdown too. Like I said, that play that wasn't a catch in my mind, because the ball was moving when it hit the ground. And that's generally, I know that sounds like the NFL and all that, but it does sound that I didn't think that was a catch, but they scored on that. So that helped them, to get that 10-3 lead. And then they added another field goal late in the first half too for Georgia. So they were up 13-3. So it was well within range. I mean, even 16-3, you score a touchdown, you're in the game. You know what I mean? It's not like they were way out of it, but when they did score a touchdown and get to 16-10, I thought it was really crucial. They came right back. Georgia did. And 7 plays, 75 yards, 24-10. Now, you know, Florida came back and had a 17-play drive. Lasted quite a while, got it to 24-17. Another impressive thing, though, those 6 plays to burn out the clock in that 3-11 stretch there, that was big, too, because that basically just quieted it up. At that point, you're only down a possession, and that was 2 separate times. So it was pretty big to hold them off, I thought, for sure. And like you said, I mean, the stats on third down, 12 of 18 is huge. Just to get 18, you know, third downs tells me it's third and short. You know what I mean? It really does. It tells me it's third and one, third and two, and they're running a lot of that ball, and 35-48 to 24-12 as far as controlling that clock. So that was a big win, and whether it was Frank's or not, you know, like you said, the offense had looked better, and I thought the Georgia defense really stood up, whereas they haven't always this year, especially when they've needed it. But that was a big win for Georgia, and not that it's a done deal, but it pretty much is, almost, you think. I mean, they still have, you know, some potential slip-ups or whatever, but it seems like they're going to go to that SEC championship game. And I think is it three in a row now for them? I believe it's three in a row. They haven't – I think it's three in a row.
I think you're right, yeah.
And I don't think there's been a – I think they put up the stat. I don't think there's been a SEC East team since Florida in the mid-90s that did it, to go three straight in a row. What'd you think of Memphis and SMU? I mean, up and down the field they go, and – I mean, this is some of the, you know, Antonio Gibson, school record, 386 all-purpose yards, had three scores. The dude did a little bit of everything when it came to this game. This is a fun game, and the fact that it was primetime, you know, that's kind of nice because some people, you know, they see this in primetime, they're like, who, what, where? But at least it was a competitive game, and it was back and forth. Now, Memphis stretched to like 40 to 24 at some point. But to SMU's credit, they did kind of get back into it. You know, down the stretch, I wouldn't call it a tight game, but it was back and forth and that type of thing. They did have they scored late to make it 54 to 48. But overall, I thought it was pretty entertaining, and Memphis got a big win. You know, they took out SMU, who hadn't lost this year.
Yeah, you know, SMU in their past couple of games, their defense is not exactly lights out. This is not a Georgia-Ohio State kind of defense. Okay? They've had some holes, but they've had an offense this year that's pretty much covered them all the time. So I think it got exposed. I will say, man, for being a non-Power 5 conference, Memphis really does find athletes all the time. It kind of is amazing. And I got to give that Norvell guy credit, because it seems like every damn year we watch a couple of Memphis games, Chris, there's a guy or two on the field that's like, he's like the fastest guy on the field, and it's not even close. So I don't know where they find those guys, but they do. And as you mentioned, those guys had some games for them. And, you know, you score 54 points, like, you know, the 380-plus for overall yardage, like, that's not normal for college football. Like, he had himself a day. And I'm still not the biggest believer in Brady White, the Memphis quarterback, but he obviously didn't make any dumb mistakes. I mean, I think those numbers are a little misleading. I think that he had himself a nice game, but a couple of his players really carried the kind of the ship themselves. But, hey, Memphis just had a win at home like they normally do. They're a pretty damn good team. I'm not like some diehard Memphis fan, but if you look at the past 4 or 5 years, they've pretty much won 9 to 10 games a year. Now, again, I don't think they're in the, you know, Bama Clemson range, but for the teams outside the Power Five, they're normally pretty one of the top end teams, and they normally score a ton of points, and they normally give up quite a few. So I think this is kind of your MO for Memphis, and they were able to hold off SMU there at the very end. But just a fun game for the American Conference. You know, we kind of always fall in the trap of, you know, Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, that's kind of all that matters. So as you mentioned, Chris, it's kind of nice to watch a primetime game, you know, Herb Street calling it, where it's two teams that are pretty good but not quite the regular teams we always see at home, and they put on a very offensive performance. Maybe not so much defensively. This was not Georgia, Florida. But if you enjoy watching football and you enjoy seeing touchdowns about every 6 or 7 plays, you definitely got treated to that. So I do know that –
So basically the Big 12 –
Yeah. And I do know that I think I'd heard that with the win, like Memphis or SMU, they're still – those guys are playing for a New Year's Day bowl. I think Boise is the one team above them, but I do know it's like schools like Boise or Memphis or SMU, to be able to get a New Year's Day bowl, the miles that does you for recruiting is huge. So that's kind of a little small thing of who's the best team, non-Power 5, that gets a little special treatment of the primetime bowl games. I know those teams are
obviously gunning for that situation as well, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, the AAC is pretty damn good. Obviously, Central Florida and some other teams. We talked about Memphis. Some other teams as well have come out of there and been at least respectable, if not damn good teams. Obviously, you know, same with the Mountain West. That's something we've documented here on the show. You're right. Sometimes other shows and ESPN get caught up in, you know, the big conferences and whatnot. And, of course, we break down the big, you know, matchups. But that's why we like to kind of lead with this type of stuff. And speaking of Boise State and the Mountain West, and we talked about San Jose State actually last week, 52-42. This was not as easy as on paper, you know, it seemed. They were, you know, they were down, what was it, 14-0 right away, I believe.
Yeah.
Or fairly early on. And they got down 24-14, I'm looking at here, too. So they had to battle back. That was a really good game. It was on the road, too. So that was definitely an interesting game. Another game, just to, we might as well stay in this theme. Oh, and real quick, you know, that the stat I talked about, the Memphis player, Gibson, he had a receiving touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and a kickoff return. I mean, this dude, and talk about speed, too, when you see him out there. Man,
they got
but Cincinnati, yeah, I'd say 46-43 Cincinnati over East Carolina. And there is some stats in that game where you're just like, oh, my gosh, dude. It was look really quick. Sorry. I thought I had it up there. So 535 yards passing, 5 TDs. And that's the dude who lost. You know, that's the guy who lost who had those stats. So, and also on the same team, because you have all those passing, the most in FBS this year anyway, stat-wise, for receiving yards, 283. That was C.J. Johnson. That was his receiver in that game. So, yeah, he set a school record for East Carolina. So really, really fun, you know, game back and forth. There was a lot of barn burners this week where you go, you know, on paper, it doesn't look like much, but it turns out to be pretty damn good. We talked about that, how if you're a hardcore fan, you can find some games in the second half that are going to be, you know, entertaining. Point blank right here, Notre Dame. This was our against the spread pick last week, Notre Dame and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is not a great team. I wouldn't even call them very good, but they just hang around with clubs for some odd reason this year. They're not as good as they were picked in the they were picked to win the Coastal. And the way the Coastal is, anyone could win the Coastal still, as we know. But 21-20, they were a 17.5-point underdog on the road. And Notre Dame, we were wondering, you know, how they were going to react coming off, you know, a pretty good beating by Michigan. And they won 21-20, but that was one of those games that, like I said, that's an against-the-spread game that kind of opened my eyes up a little bit. Last week, like I said, Utah did get an important win on the road as well, and Utah is really lining up to kind of get back on the horse what they thought they were at the beginning of the year. So they got a really good chance to, you know, square off against Oregon. Speaking of Oregon, unfortunately, you know, if you look at this game in the first chunk of it, you're like, hey, man, this might be a good game, dude. I mean, it wasn't like Oregon got up 28-0 in the first quarter or something like that. In fact, it was USC that got up. In fact, didn't they get up, I think, 10-0, something like that. And at half, it was 28-17, so it wasn't like completely out of control, but then it got exactly that, out of control, 56-24. Like I said, it hurts me even saying it because of my co-host. I know this kind of irks them. Just about some of the games in the top 25 before we get into a little bit more, you know, other items too from week 10. But any of those games kind of, you know, do something for you, or you get any comments on some of that? Because like I said, there wasn't a ton of upsets, but there was a lot of almost, like I said, West Virginia and Baylor too.
Yeah,
the USC game, man, just another rough performance. I mean, we're at home, so I can't knock Clay Helton for losing on the road, but we lost again. I just, that team, we're 5-4. I know USC did have a super hard schedule this year, but I would still expect, you know, fans of a, you know, proud fan base to want to have a better record than 5-4. And I'm going to assume we're probably not done losing the game this year. I don't think we're going to finish, you know, 8-4 or whatever. The news that really scared me, though, Chris, and why I might retire as a USC fan, I have the
here we go.
Map, which is
I'll let you finish it.
I will officially, like, you know, plant the sword in midfield and walk away from Trojan fans for a long time, because USC are willing to do anything at all costs to have Urban Meyer walk the sidelines for USC. If we do that for a podcast, I'm going to play at the tiniest violin. I don't know what I would do. This has been my longest football team I've ever supported.
Please make this happen, football gods, AD gods, athletic directors across the country. All make Urban Meyer go to USC. Because that way PJ Fleck doesn't go there, for Christ's sakes. Hey, Florida State and USC is going to be open. I'm just hoping that PJ Fleck doesn't row his boat to Tallahassee or Southern Cal.
Yeah, you know, going to high school in Alaska, I obviously never had a football team, just because they don't have college football in Alaska. And, you know, USC was good in their, you know, early 2000s and fell in love with them. But, man, if my most hated coach in football goes to my most beloved team, it is a line in the sand that I will not cross. Apparently, you know, I think Meyer wants the job. USC just hired a new AD. Maybe the AD doesn't want Meyer. You know, the guy does bring criminals and felons onto your school, so maybe he'll realize that. But it sounds like we're going to go all out for Meyer, and there will be a somber podcast if that happens. I hope it doesn't, but I got a feeling Clay Helton's out the door. If Meyer wants to come back, why not go to a proud program, even though Kiffin hated him when he was – I mean, I just, anyways, moving on. Utah.
So, but you supported that program, even though, you know, O.J. Simpson went there. But we'll move on. Keep on. We'll digress.
I wasn't supporting them at that time. But Utah, to go on to a positive note on the Pac-12, man, Utah, you know, a lot of people at the start of the year thought that they were a potential team to sneak in the Final Four. And I'm not saying that's quite there, but they're still in the running. If a couple of weird things were to happen and they win the Pac-12, I'm not saying that their Final Four chances are out the window quite yet. They're 8-1 on the year, 5-1. They also got down 14-3 in the first half of Washington. And as we know, as I've said it many times, Washington is very inconsistent. They have the talent. They have a great head coach, but, you know, some games they win, some games they lose. You can never quite kind of pinpoint who they are. So, you know, when I saw Utah down 13-3, I'm thinking, or 14-3, I'm okay, they're in a little bit of trouble. But just a steady offense. You know, I didn't know this, but apparently Hundley, the Utah quarterback, is like one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the whole country. Now, I think those stats are a little bit deceiving. You know, he's kind of, I would say, maybe kind of like a Patriots offense. You know, it's nothing flashy. You know, it's kind of like the check down, kind of like what Brady does. I think that's kind of the offense that, you know, Whittingham runs at Utah. But he's effective with it. He is very accurate. He is 19 of 24 for 284. That's obviously a pretty good game. And they ran the ball 44 times for a 115. That Zach Moss is a pretty damn good running back, 27 carries, 100 yards. That guy's been really good for the past couple of years and not injured.
He's setting records and records. And Huntley, just to add on, he looks healthy now. His back was getting him some issues, and that means a whole lot for a running quarterback. And now he's kind of a dual threat where he can pass some and run.
Yeah. And you know, Moss, too, when Moss has been dinged up this year, too. So if you get your two – you know, go-to piece of an offense back, that's a huge plus. And like I said, they have one of the best coaches in the Pac-12. You could argue maybe the best.
I know maybe he doesn't quite have the accolades that Oregon's got him late, but, I mean, for win-loss records, man, Whittingham, that dude's a gamer. So a nice win by Utah. They're hanging in there. You know, they're obviously going to have to go to try to win the Pac-12 here, but they got UCLA and Arizona and Colorado coming up. So in theory, they should run the table and win their part of the Pac-12. Okay, I mean, obviously they're going to be the favorite in all of those games. UCLA and Colorado are at home. Going to Arizona can be kind of fluky, but so they have a good chance of finishing 8-1 in conference, and will lead to them playing Oregon again. Hey, credit to Utah. They started the year with a lot of pressure, Chris. They haven't backed away from it. Somehow my Trojans beat them. If not for that, they'd be undefeated and probably in the top 5 or 4. But we'll see how that plays out. And I was just happening to look at the Pac-12 standings as I read the information. Oregon State is second in the Pac-12 North. Holy God. I don't know the last time I've ever seen that, Chris. They are 3-2. They're second.
Yeah, I saw
in
that.
The Pac-12
I was looking at
North.
Conferences last night, late last night, kind of scouting. I saw that too. I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot about that. But isn't that crazy?
They are above Stanford, Washington, Cal, and Washington State. Credit to the Oregon State Beavers, who are normally the bottom of the barrel 2-10 team. My God, that is good for them. You know, that's kind of why I mentioned San Jose State last week, who's normally been like a bottom 5 team in Division I football. They're like 4-6 this year. They played Boise really tight this past week. You know, it takes a lot to be a coach that hangs in there and is getting recruits when you're trying to recruit kids for a team that's going to win 2 games a year. That was Oregon State. But, man, they're in second place. Wow, credit to them to have a winning record this far into the season. That's freaking awesome, man. No one ever wants to see a team be bad forever unless it's your hardcore rival. So shout out to Oregon State, 4-4 in the year. I hope they go to a damn bowl game. Yeah, that they probably have not been to a bowl game in quite a while. So yeah, go Beavers. good job. That back on track, Chris. That just threw me for a loop. My God, brother, it's been a long time since that happened for that team.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. It was I saw that too. I'm glad you, like I said, I'm glad that you brought that up because I totally forgot about that. But I did see that. Just kind of talking about some of those outstanding individual performances out there. The running back, and I'm freaking, what's his damn name from Clemson? Starts with the E. It's I forgot what his damn name is. Let me look it up. Edian, that's what it is.
Edian, yeah.
He ran for 212 rushing yards, school record 48 career rushing TDs. And, I mean, this dude, I think it's his third 200-yard game rushing-wise, and he's just been a workhorse for them. They've had some pretty damn good running backs, obviously at Clemson, but this guy – third career, it's a school record. No one's had 3 200-yard games. Speaking of 200-yard games, yeah. A.J. Dillon had that as well. That's what I was going to add to it, and I couldn't find the damn stat. But, yeah, on very limited attempts, to say the least, dude. Another guy, I think it was for Liberty, Buckshot Kelvert or something like that. He put up some serious passing yards, dude. I mean, he was just all over the place with the passing yards, dude. I think it was for them. I got to find that stat real quick. You got to see some of this stuff, dude. It's just like, okay, so Liberty, that's who it is. And Liberty, their goal is to become Notre Dame. That's, they've stated it. They're 6-3 right now. They want to become that religion school, you know, Catholic or whatever they're trying, you know, whatever they are. And they're ready to just put boosters towards the goal, basically. But he had 488 yards passing, right? 4 touchdowns. But look at this. And this is over UMass. And we talk about UMass from time to time in our crappy pick of the week. But – they had, oh man, So I talked about the 488 passing. They ran for 242 as well. And they had three turnovers. They still just fall. I mean, this could have been 80 to – they could have put up 80 points if it wasn't for the three turnovers. But check this out, dude. So a total yard, 730, because they ran for 242, 730 to 240, dude. I mean, that is crazy. And then you have Boston College. I mentioned Dylan. These guys were just – there's 14 minutes to play on Syracuse. Boston College had 471 yards rushing at that point, up 58-27 at that point. I mean, this was on some really crazy stuff, dude. I couldn't believe it. And that was early in the game, you know what I mean? They had 336, and it wasn't even halftime yet rushing. So yeah, I'm just kind of, like I said, there was a bunch of individual, you know, I try to wrap up some of this, but some of these were just too good not to mention, you know what I mean? Anything else from week 11 or week 10 that you want to talk about, sir? Obviously my Miami Hurricanes took care of that Florida State team three in a row, and so much so that it took care of the coach too. And now I'm worried PJ Fleck may go to Tallahassee.
I honestly think, you know, normally the name is bigger, but the Gophers are a better team, like, period. If they were to play tomorrow or next week on Saturday, the Gophers would beat Florida State. Like,
okay, stop right now. Just stop, okay? Just stop. If you get P.J. Fleck and his backyard is Florida, come on, dude. Come on. Okay, keep going.
Oh, I'm with
you. It's still
you,
a bigger name,
but
I don't care what you say. Still a, you know,
no.
It's way bigger. Like, way too.
Well,
they have
yeah.
more talent on the team right now. It just needs to be coached properly.
I just don't want PJ Fleck to leave. I'm with you. I know. I'm with you. I agree. But I hope he stays in the Gophers because the guy's doing something special. And yeah, Florida State, screw them. Anyways, I will say, you know, we talked a little bit about Kansas last week. You know, hey, the Jayhawks are playing better football. Les Miles is, you know, spinning the ship around the right direction. Well, K-State's also playing pretty good football, too. You know, they beat Oklahoma. The point spread for this game was only 6 points. K-State said, screw y'all. I know this is – I think it's the Sunflower rival. We're still pretty good at football, and you're not going to catch us yet. They won 38-10. So the Kansas hype, it's still getting good. You got 3 wins on the year. You might get a few more, maybe. But – K-State's like, nah, dude, we beat Oklahoma, now we're going to kick your ass, and we're going to keep moving on. So credit to K-State. Again, they're
no hangover.
Yeah, there was no hangover. And another coach who's been talked about a lot, but he's really not been in the news that much this year because his team is pretty garbage, and that's Scott Frost. The dude had UCF going in the right direction. Now he goes back to his beloved Nebraska, and people were getting ready to crown him like, getting ready to fight with, you know, Ohio State and everyone else in the Big Ten. Nebraska's 2-4 now in the Big Ten again. That's another rough year for Nebraska, man. I don't feel bad for them because I'm not a fan at all. But Purdue gets their second Big Ten win of the year. Purdue wins 31-27. It was a back and forth game. It was 14-10 at half. Both teams scored 3 points in the third quarter. Both teams scored 2 touchdowns in the second quarter. So an extra couple points in the first half did for Purdue. But Purdue has not quit on the year. They were obviously off to a very poor start, and they've put a couple wins together here in a row. And Nebraska, man, I maybe it's going to be next year for Scott Frost. I'm not sure what is quite going on there. They normally get the talent. They appeared to get the coach, and things are just not quite clicking there. Maybe it's a quarterback. I'm not sure. But I can't imagine, Chris, people in Lincoln are going to be too much more patient. I know you bring in the homeboy that won you a national title and, like, everything is perfect. He was a great coach at UCF. And they're struggling again, man. Like, do you have any take on what you think might be going on? Or because this win-loss record is really ugly again for Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean, I think people just, you know, I think that, well, I don't know. I think that he had a lot of hype coming in. I think that
sure.
It's going to take a little bit longer to turn around than some of, you know, thought. A lot of people just gave away the Big West to him.
Yeah.
you know, it is what it is. You know what I mean? I can't sit there and sit, I wouldn't be talking about firing him because I didn't fall for the huge hype this year, like a lot of the experts out there did. A ton of the experts did. But, yeah, I think it's going to take some time. It'll be interesting to see because, like you said, the team, you know, a guy that played there, you know, and especially, you know, with the national championship, that brings in pressure. But hopefully they give him a little time because I think he is still on the up and up. But it is a fan base that was spoiled for a long time, and they, like, through generations, spread that we're better than we think mentality, I guess you could say, to their children. Because remember, not too long ago, they were winning 10 games, 9 and 10 games consistently, but they couldn't win the whole thing. Remember that? Wasn't too long ago.
Like Pelini and Callahan, all those guys. Yeah, you're right.
Especially Pelini. And he had them going. He had them going. He had them there at 9 and 10 every year. It is tough to win it all. I mean, there's some pretty damn good coaches in the Big Ten. So I don't know, man. We'll see. Hopefully they give them a little bit more time. But yeah, you're right. It is it's kind of interesting how all the experts just assume because, hey, man, if you did that at Central Florida, we could do this. But you could find a lot more, and not that he doesn't hit up Florida, but you could find a lot more, needles in the haystack, so to speak, in Florida when you're in the backyard and you can literally go out and just watch a game, not have to travel there all the time. It is what it is. Just to keep it going and wrap it up, Virginia, North Carolina, that was a good game, 38-31. UCLA winning some games, oh my goodness, 31-14. BYU just stopped Utah State. That was a surprise. I thought that would have been a barn burner, 42-14. And a minor upset of the week, I think they're only 3.5-point underdog or something like that. Fresno went to Hawaii on the road, 41-38. Any other items you want to touch upon before we get into this major week upon us, man? It's a big, big games coming up this weekend.
God, my dumb self. I always give an over every week on the show that wins, and I didn't bet it. Oregon State, the reason they're 4-4, they beat Arizona 56-38. Damn. Ah, shit.
Was it 70? Whatever. Was it 71 or 72? It went well over.
Yeah, man, whatever game I say over, text me this week so I can make sure to bet it because I'm like 3-1 on overs this year and I keep forgetting about them. But props to the Beavers, that's it, Chris. Let's move on to a week where, man, this I kind of wish that the game would be at night. I know that CBS has always had the deal where they get the 2:30 block on during the day on CBS. That's the SEC game of the week, and obviously – the game of the week is Bama-LSU, but I kind of wish it was at night. And I know it's not at LSU, so you don't get the whole Death Valley craziness, but even Bama and that would be kind of cool. Unfortunately, the game is at 2:30, so if you got plans for your weekend.
The 2011 one, not to cut you off, but the 2011 one was at night. I specifically remember because I had to work that night, and everybody's watching the game, but it was at night.
Yeah, so I wish you could make an exception. Like, hey, CBS, I know you got some probably like programming shows on that have laugh tracks, but can we put Bama LSU on to make an exception? So, couple news bits going into the week. You know, obviously, in minor news, LSU is actually leading sack player on defense actually stepped away from the team. They're not quite sure it was a personal reason. Coach O said he's welcome to come back to the team if you choose to. But he said he had to take care of some personal things. Obviously, sports are just sports, and life presides above that, so I'm not sure what had happened. But LSU's best edge rusher is out for the game. That doesn't help them. But who he would have been rushing and who will be under center for Bama is the big deal. The line for the game is out. Vegas has Bama as a 6.5-point favorite. That would lead you to believe that Vegas thinks that Tua is going to play because I don't think they would put a line out like this if they didn't. Why? Because if Tua doesn't play, I don't think Bama's favored. And so you're kind of opening yourself to a liability of, you know, if people, like inside people, heard something and like, okay, Tua's out, let's go pound LSU. Giving LSU almost a touchdown, Chris, without Tua in would be a huge, like, you're getting great odds. So obviously, will Tua, will or he not play? That's a huge issue. I think if he does play, we're in for a hell of a game. As Chris has mentioned many times this year, LSU's offense is really, really, really good. They've statistically probably been the best offense in the country this year or top three. And normally when we talk about LSU, they're called DBU for a reason. Like, they have defensive players that it seems like on half the NFL teams in the league that are really good. And so they've definitely flipped their script. Joe Burrow went from a guy who was like a 50% passer now to like about 72%. So the LSU offense is going. And Bama's offense, when Tua's going, is really, really good too. I'll say this, Chris. I know obviously if you're an LSU fan, you want to win the game. But there's got to be a small part of LSU fans that want to see Tua against Joe Burrow. I know obviously you'd want to take the win with a backup, but maybe I should just say football fans in general. It'd be fun to see two top guys face off against each other, because if Tua's out, that really kind of puts a wrinkle on what could be one of the best games of the year for us to watch.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's not only will he be back, but how will he play? You know,
fair.
Rusty
fair.
Or not rusty, how healed is he? Didn't he have like a minor surgery on it? Pretty sure.
I'm not sure. Okay.
Maybe I'm thinking about some other player. I swear to God he had a minor surgery. I'm gonna Google search it really quick just to see. I'm pretty sure. Because that, I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, like you can get him back and everything like that, but you have to make sure. And when I say surgery, you know, like, I don't mean like, you know, I don't think he did this time.
Okay. But I think what you're saying, you know, is a Tua at 80%, you know, how effective is he? You know, obviously Saban's not going to trot him out if he's, you know, going to get, you know, beat up and killed or anything. But, again, there is that always pressing image. Well, you know, he says he can go. You know, what kind of guy are we getting? If that is the situation, then you have to make the wise decision and say, do we want a 70% Tua on the field, or do we want a backup to go in there who appears to be completely healthy? That's a tough spot. I would assume, Chris, Bama's going to keep this hush-hush all the way into the week unless they know Tua is healthy and really ready to go. Yeah, but I'd expect not to hear much injury news this whole week until maybe Friday night, Saturday morning.
All right, so I have a little information. So he got the they call it the zip tie surgery. It's basically it just really helps with the ankle sprain, obviously. And or that they call it the tightrope procedure. It's the orthopedic zip tie. So basically, it's very similar to his last injury. So you know, it's a very minor thing. You know what I mean? No doubt about it. Real quick, this is kind of on the subject, kind of off the subject. What do you think of, and what made me think of, I wanted to say it to you, and it reminded me of it, because you talked about last year how he was like a 50% thrower, passer, Burrow. What do you think now that it seems like these wide receivers, they have some young ones, or some of them just are playing better this year, developed now too, right? And obviously they got a new person running this, you know, the offensive coordinator and the coaches, they probably layered with him potentially, or at least one or two. I don't really know exactly that, but we know they got a new coach. So the system change, it fit Burrow better, it fit the wide receivers better, whatever the case may be. They usually have a pretty damn good offensive line at LSU in general. What do you make of Joe Burrow, though, potentially being higher rated than Tua, or maybe even the first round pick of the draft? Do you think it's that much improvement in about a 9-month period in the off season, or do you think it's a blend of things around him and he improved, because all of a sudden they got this guy maybe going first when we've seen him great, good and bad, we've seen the good, bad, and ugly with him. You know what I mean? It kind of makes you go, huh, is he operating in a system and he's improved, or has he just made this dramatic step to where now he could possibly be a first-round pick? I'm wondering what your thought on that, because I think it's pretty intriguing. It's a good question, I think.
I think the guy put in a shitload of time in the offseason. I know that schemes can change, plays can get better, play calls can get better, your wide receiving core can get better, but again, I remind you, he had, last year against Auburn, the guy had like 16 incompletions in a row. Now, he still had the heart and the drive to make a game-winning play or two to win the game, but you know, not many great quarterbacks have 16 incompletions. I don't care how good your defense is. You know, so I think the
right, and everybody's working hard in the offseason. It's not like he's the hardest worker, and we know that for a fact. That's why I'm kind of weird about this. You know, like if I was one of the worst teams in the league in the NFL, that was one of my squads this year, and I was looking at him, and they were saying, "Hey, we may get Joe Burrow." What would you think? You know.
I think that Tua is still more of a natural athletic passer. I think he's got a little more of that, you know, the genes, the athletic genes. But, you know, is he going to be able to stay healthy? I think that's kind of a fair question to ask. If you're going to invest your money in a guy who, you know, in the past, 15 games of his – well, not even 15, in the past 8 games of his college football career, he's – you know, been hurt in about a quarter of them. So, that's obviously scary. I do think that, again, he's a naturally talented player, but for kind of honing in on the quarterback skill, what he's been doing this year, I think maybe Burrow's a little bit of a safer call as we go now. You know, obviously you got the combine and all the good stuff coming up, but, man, obviously he did work hard, you know, obviously, but a lot of college athletes do, but he did something over the summer to fix it. Got a pretty good wide receiving core, but, man, Jesus, that's a hard question. I think right
it's
now
a mystery to me. It's a mystery. I still don't get how the offense is this good. I'm still like, all right, dude.
I know.
They're going to – at some point they're going to – it's going to be like the Patriots or the – you know, they'll find him cheating on some shit, be like, this is how they did it. We know now. You know, I don't know. It's just weird. It's just really weird. But let's get to the nuts and bolts of this thing. First of all, to see an over-under at 64 in this game
is a change
of tide. Go ahead.
I'm going to call right back in so I don't lose you. I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, we have 20 minutes before the cutoffs. We didn't really need to do that. You know what he was doing, and I'll say that while he's gone. He was just ducking the pick. That's all he's doing. He's ducking the pick. He's still thinking about it. He doesn't know what he wants to do. He heard that the defensive lineman's out now, which that's big. That's their biggest sack getter. All right, we're going to go ahead and bring him in. All right, now that we got your back, sir, over under 64. It just kind of makes me laugh a little bit to see that, like, and smile at the same time. Well, I suppose you laugh when you smile, but, you know, it's kind of like, wow, okay, finally this thing – like, they're going to score some points, you know what I mean, in this game. And it's not going to be 9-6. It's not going to be 9-6. But 6.5-point, you know, favorite, the 3 points in there, so because of the home. And so you figure, you know, a little bit more than a field goal favorite for Bama. Like you said, I do feel like that does tell you something about where they think Tua's back. And the fact that they have some experience – as well. Now, they had more time to heal him than they had in this one. They had a bye week, but is it as bad as it was back then when Jalen Hurts had to come off the bench? That's a tough one to decipher. You know, I really don't know exactly. It seems like that one was worse. What I do know is defensively, LSU, you know, pass game, they give up some, you know, some passing yards. They are better at rush defense, too, though. It's kind of crazy because both defenses aren't elite like they normally are. I know we can sit there and say all the amount of points that people have piled up at times against LSU, but those are better teams too. Some of them like Texas early in the season, before they had their defensive struggles too. They or injuries, I should say. They put up a bunch of points there, but they can put up points, Texas can. My point is LSU's played a lot tougher teams than Bama on average. So yeah, your stats aren't gonna look as good. And not only that, but I really like to highlight both defenses, and the reason why is because I don't know if it's true today, but a couple weeks ago they were starting Alabama. When I say they, were starting all freshmen or redshirt freshmen on the line. Their defensive line hasn't been as dominant, and maybe, just maybe, because they haven't really played too many teams this year, Bama, I'm speaking of, like high-level games. I mean, they played Duke. They played at South Carolina, which is a decent game. South Carolina beat Georgia, and they were in that game for a while. Then they weren't. But then you look at Ole Miss. You know, A&M was ranked a little bit before them. They're a good club. They took care of them. Tennessee, you see what I'm saying? Like, they're not really – they haven't played the schedule LSU has. So,
no.
Are we kind of just looking at LSU's defense and saying, hey, there might be a problem there? Maybe there's a problem with Bama. Not a problem, but just not, like I said, as dominant as it normally is. What's your thoughts going into this one, and who do you think's going to win, number one LSU or number two Bama?
I think if both are healthy, quarterbacks I'm speaking of, I think if two is healthy, I will lean Bama. Just because I think Bama being at home with their defense, it would be just the extra nudge you need to outplay LSU, because I think LSU's defense has obviously had its issues, not the Bama's hasn't. But I would give the home advantage lean to Bama. But if it's not Tua, I think LSU, again, you have a great value. If you are a gambler, I would just bet LSU right now plus the 6.5. And if Tua plays and you're nervous, you can watch the bet or bet Bama or do something. But you're getting a lot of value there because there's no guarantee that Tua is going to play. Or as you said, Chris, okay, Tua plays, but he's not healthy. You're getting a lot of points for a team that might be the better team that night. So I think that obviously Saban's going to have, you know, a hell of a game plan set up. It is kind of cool. Both teams are coming off byes. So, and as much as I love Coach O, you got to give the advantage here to Saban. And he'll have some type of defensive scheme to try to slow down Joe Burrow. You know, Auburn contained LSU's offense as much as anyone has this year. I think Saban's going to come up with something similar to that. So I guess what I'm saying, Chris, is that if Tua plays, I lean Bama. If he doesn't play, I don't see how Alabama can match the firepower with LSU's offense. I know that Bama's back quarterback did okay against Arkansas, but Arkansas is a freaking joke. And I think if you have the backup coming in against LSU in a huge rivalry game, I think that's presenting too many issues. And for once, I do like the over. I think no matter who plays, even if it is Bama's backup, I still think the guy's going to be able to score some points. I would lean towards the game being in the 30s together, maybe someone hits 40. It'll be a fun up and down game, but I think LSU's offense will do just enough if it's just Joe and flip the script if Tua does play.
So you're basically just wimping out of the pick. You're not going to make a pick. You're going to have a crutch and lean on it. Is that what you're telling me? Is that what's going on here?
Okay. If I had to pick now, I'll man up. I'll take.
Well,
LSU
you do. That's the prediction
right.
Segment, sir. You do have to
right. Two or not, LSU wins.
All right. That's what I like to hear, my friend. And I'm with you. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I don't know what. It tastes good, though. They don't have to put more sugar in. I'm sure. Actually, maybe I'm drinking the sweet tea because we're talking about Louisiana. So I'm drinking the sweet tea. And maybe they put some Kool-Aid in there a little bit. That'd be pretty good, actually. So you went over. You went over.
Take the over, yeah.
Take the over. You're confident about that. So what I'm telling you is maybe that's the bet.
Tua plays.
Yeah, if Tua plays, take the over, and we'll know. I mean, they say game time, but we'll know in time to be able to still get that over bet in.
Yeah.
So if are you going to do that then and listen to your own advice like you've been saying, or is that not that confident of a pick?
I bet there might be some better overs to find than that, but I would definitely lead over on that game. Yes, sir.
Nice. This is great, man. We're committing to everything. I'm with you, though. I'm going with LSU. I just think it's different. I think that we've documented the damn defense for LSU not as good, and their offense not as good, but I don't think their defense is as good there at Alabama either, or as great as it's been. I think it's still a damn good defense, but considering who you played, I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, so we're both going with LSU. Maybe it's just out of Saban envy. I don't know what it is, but we're going with it. Penn State, number 5 in the country, versus number 13, Minnesota. And obviously I'm saying number this, number that, but we know the numbers are going to change tomorrow for the first college football playoff ranking, by the way. So bear with us on that. But, you know, emotionally, I've just looked at this game as a Gopher fan. 8-0, all this stuff, you know, haven't been 8-0 since 1941, yada, 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 right? All this stuff. And there's so many different records that you could – they're not records, but just comparisons that you could say it hasn't happened in so long. And so, you know, during that bye week, while the players were healing and P.J. Fleck was out there recruiting with that 8-0 record that had to help him a lot. I just took it in. I just decided to just take it in and enjoy it and know that a 10-win season is phenomenal, especially for the Gophers. But if you can hit 9-10 a year, you're in good shape and you're well on your way to becoming a top 25 program every year. That's how it goes. You know what I mean? Look at the Badgers. Have they won a national championship in all this great run since the 90s? Nope, they have. But people respect the hell out of them for obvious reasons. So I look at these last four. I know we're not breaking down the Gopher season here, but if I look at these last four games, 8-0, if they ended up 10-2, that would mean that they beat Iowa at Iowa or beat Wisconsin at home 10-2, and they'd obviously win at Northwestern too. That would be a tough one, though. I say obvious, not that they obviously will, but obvious to get to 10. I'm picking Penn State in this one. I think that some of those games early on in the season that were tight, you could sit there and say, oh, it was vanilla play calling, which it was. We ran like the same play 32 times in a game and all that type of stuff. I get all that, but there was still pick six interceptions, scooping scores. Georgia Southern, you know, we had a chance to put them away. I think it was like 30-17, and they ended up, you know, getting some long, like 90 some odd yard drive where they scored, and then they got an onside kick that they picked up and ran for like 30 yards or something like that. A lot of stuff has been going on in some of these games. Now, the last in October, we blew everybody out. It wasn't a game. But I just think that we're going to – the levels are going to show. And I really, in a humble way, I just want to belong on the same field as that team, just to be honest with you. So I'm hoping for a 2-0 – well, I'm hoping for 4-0, obviously. But realistically, if they went 2-2, they could still go to the Big Ten. They could win the Big Ten West. They could, you know, go to the Big Ten conference final. Maybe even get a rematch. You never know. Matters what Penn State does. But I'm going, unfortunately, the favorite is 6.5. I don't know the over-under, but they are favorite. Penn State is 6.5 points. I'm going to go with them, and a lot of it has to do with their run defense. 68 yards a game, and they have played some teams that could run to an extent anyway. That's what it comes down to me. I think that they're going to stop the run And although we have wide receivers, we still need to be able to protect. And that defensive line is the best defensive line we faced. And I say we as in the Gophers. So I'm going to go, unfortunately, Penn State to beat Minnesota, but hope that they can go 10-2. And like I said, even if they lost at Iowa, we know how hard a game that would be, and come back and beat Northwestern Wisconsin, go to the Big Ten Championship, that'd be just fine with me. What says you, sir?
I'm going to take the Gophers. I think this is the biggest game y'all have had in probably 8 or 9 years in the home stadium at least. I know last year when they beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin, that was their biggest win they've had in a long time, but that –
Yeah, that TCU
game.
That TCU game, remember that TCU game when they were ranked high early on? That was a really close game. That was a big game. But you know what? This dates back to the Metrodome. Michigan, a couple touchdowns on Michigan, they ended up coming back. That would have been a big year. That was 2004, I think, or 2003? 2003. That's the last big game at home.
Yeah, so I just think this is the biggest game they've had since maybe 15 years, and I just think the crowd, I think they find a way to get it done. I don't think Penn State's quarterback has been overly impressive. I think he's had a great defense surrounding him, and he doesn't make mistakes, but I just think they've been just adequate enough. They've made enough plays, but I just find it hard to believe that this Penn State team is ranked higher now than they ever were with, like, McSorley and Saquon Barkley. It just – something doesn't quite seem right, and I just think that this – The run for the Gophers continues. Obviously, I'm not a Penn State guy. I think their coach is a prick, as many other people do in this country. But I just think the Gophers have everything to play for here. The crowd should, hopefully will be a sellout. I know they haven't had many sellouts. You know, the attendance has been better, but this should be a sellout game. They probably would have game day if not for Bama LSU. And I just think they'll find a way to get it done. It's an upset pick. Obviously, Vegas is saying that, hey, you know, Penn State's probably better by 9 points if you factor in everything considered. But I just think they find a way to get it done. This would not be the craziest upset to occur, and I think that just – I think the momentum is enough to carry them to a victory, and it would be really cool to see the Gophers knock off a top-five team at home and kind of put a cherry on top for – you know, this could be the win of the year. Now, obviously, there's more to come, hopefully, if you win this, but this could be an awesome win, and I just hope they get it done. So – I'll take the Gophers ground game, and they, because I don't see Penn State blowing y'all out. Okay, I'm not saying again if they win, you know, whatever. But I see this game being tight. So go Gophers.
There we go, and that would be phenomenal. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I kind of like in these moments to pick against my personal squad because then I get the pick right, or I don't care. You know what I mean? It's like
sure. Yeah.
Like they won, and I'd be plenty happy, and you know. It, some people will think that's kind of weak or, you know, whatever. I'm just a realist. You know what I mean? I'm not – what I think about my local, you know, sports teams has nothing to do with what is on the field. No matter what people in the SEC and on the East Coast, like Philadelphia fans, no matter what they think, it's not true. Whatever I think or if I cheer a little louder – at home, that's not going to help my squad. Now, you could cause a false start at the game. Sure, I'll give you that for sure. But that's about it. That'd be great, though. Man, that'd be phenomenal. And then as far as rank versus rank, one more. This one's interesting because doing the math, you know, the Gophers have a two-game lead. Both Iowa and Wisconsin have two losses, right? So – Iowa and Wisconsin have to face off. This one's in Madison, I believe. And Vegas thinks Wisconsin's going to pretty much do their thing. They're 8.5 point favored in the game. Iowa offensively just isn't that good. You know, that's basically why they've lost some of these games. They're just not that good. They're not as good as a team as maybe – I'm not going to say they were highly touted coming in this season, but offense has clearly slowed them down. But if you look at it, I mean, against Michigan, they lost 10-3. Against Penn State, they lost 17-12. I mean, that's tough. You know, those are close games. I just feel like Wisconsin's got the better run game, obviously, with Taylor. And I just think that they're going to do enough to win like 20 to 10 or 16 to 10 or 16 to 13. I like the Badgers in this one. What says you? And that basically, whoever wins this game, just to finish my thought, whoever wins this game, the Govers have to beat. It's basically how it's going to break down. Because let's say they lose to Penn State. Well, if Wisconsin wins, they can still lose to Iowa and be on the same page with, you know, losses, both of them have two, and then win at Northwestern, which Northwestern is way down this year, so that's a doable thing, and then have to win at home against Wisconsin and still, like I said, win that side of the Big Ten. So for me, that's a big matchup to watch just because it really is like, all right, so who do we got to beat next type thing?
Yeah. I'm with you. Iowa's offense has just been so bad. Now, the only thing I would say for Iowa's defense is what kind of Wisconsin team is going to show up? You know, you had a huge choke job against Illinois. Ohio State kicked the crap out of you. I mean, maybe this is a game Iowa can sneak in just because maybe they are a little more of a confident team. I don't know. It's just I expect the Badgers to fight back, but, you know, the last two games you've played and people watched, they've been pretty ugly. So do we see a Badger team that was beating, you know, bad teams this year by 30 points a game, or do we see a Badger team that is still in a downfall that just can't, you know, get the train back on the tracks? So, I mean, I'm with you. I lean Wisconsin, but if we see a team that actually should be ranked 16th, like, they can win the game. But they have not played their caliber football of late. So, here, I'll say this. I would take Iowa minus – or I would take Iowa plus the 8.5 points. I would take – yeah, Hawkeyes, 8.5 points. Because the only game is going to be low scoring. Both teams have respectable defenses. Yeah, so I would lean – take Iowa and you get yourself a touchdown plus a point and a half. So I'd be okay taking that bet. Man, besides, those are definitely are the top matchups of the week. You know, as you always say for, like, barn burners, or, as you know, the Big 12 is kind of full with barn burners this week. Texas Tech plays West Virginia. I know the records aren't that pretty, but those are only fun games to watch. Baylor travels to TCU. Now, if you're Baylor, this is a big game for you. You're 8-0. You're undefeated. You actually still have a backdoor chance to sneak into that playoff if you could run the table and certain things happen. So this is a game where you can't really, you know, have any slip-ups. I think they maybe got a little cocky. As you said last week, you know, Baylor was like a 17-point favorite against West Virginia, and Baylor won 17-14 on Thursday. So, you know, Baylor got it done. Maybe they wake up a little bit. You're playing a TCU team that you are better than, but can Baylor move to 9-0? They've had a lot of close, tight games this year. And as we know, Chris, if you keep flipping that quarter, eventually it's going to come up heads or tails and you're wishing for the other one. So can the Baylor streak continue? I will lean that way. If you like Baylor, I would definitely bet them. They're only minus 2.5 on the road at TCU.
Right.
TCU's home field advantage is nothing to brag about. One thing TCU's got going for them is you have a very, very smart head coach. You got
And it's like good week, bad week with them too. Which TCU shows is going to show up?
True.
And
yeah,
they may just show up this week and beat Baylor.
They could. That is a team that, like, yeah, they're definitely a little bipolar. They've had their moments where they beat Texas, but then they get, you know, ran out the gym by Iowa State. You know, that's. But if you're Baylor, man, keep hoping, keep finding a way. And obviously, you still got your date coming
right
up with Oklahoma, and that win there could be huge, but, you know, does Baylor hold on? We'll see. And what's the other one I saw? And Kansas State.
Yeah. Texas is a 6-point favorite at home. A little different than a couple of weeks ago. Now Texas is the unranked team, but yet they're favored at home. That's a really interesting one to me.
I don't think the right team is favored there. K-State just beat Oklahoma. Who cares about Kansas beating them? But K-State's playing good football, and they're not injured. I'll keep it very short, but we've said the whole year, Texas's defense is beat up bad. This defense was like supposed to be a middle of pack to above average defense this year with like new coming people. But they've just had injury after injury. So, I would love to take K-State plus 6.5. What do they have to lose? You know, they can't win a title, but, man, they're playing to finish highly respected in the Big 12. You know, you beat your rival. You beat Oklahoma. Now you're playing a team that's beat up, and all you're going to do is kind of run the ball down their throat. I love K-State here, man. That's my pick of the week. I'll take K-State. Be a smart gambler. Take the half a point. So, you get K-State plus 7. Take the K-State Wildcats to a walk in Austin and get a W. Man, I'm with you, Chris. I think Vegas is – I know we always say this when we bite our tongues or get kicked in the mouth, but
yeah.
I think the wrong team is favored. I would take K-State definitely, get them plus 7, and roll the dice there.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, it's going to be a competitive game. You know, they're just like – just to keep with that Big 12, Oklahoma, 12.5 favorite – or 13.5 favorite, excuse me, to a visiting Iowa State. Which team is going to show up for Iowa State? That's another club, TCU and Iowa State. You just don't know which one, but they've seemingly turned the tide a little bit, and they seem like they're slowing teams down a little bit. Obviously, you're not going to slow down Oklahoma. You just hope to contain them a little bit, even though that Oklahoma-Texas game was slow at the start. Then it, you know, went sporadically – it all of a sudden was really, you know, an interesting game. But that's another one where you look and you go, I wonder if Iowa State can sneak under that 13.5. But it's hard to have faith, you know, in them this year because it seems like every time they get ranked, they don't know what the hell to do with it this year anyway. But, hey, they're not ranked. So that's good. They're not ranked. So that's good week, bad week, you know. Another game we talked about how Virginia Tech is just, you know, they're 6-3. They're not a great club, but they're beating people. They beat my Canes. Actually, they're 5-3. They beat my Canes in overtime on some weird stuff, but, you know, it is what it is. But Wake Forest, who, by the way, hasn't been 7-1 since 2006, they're a 2.5-point favorite on the road at Wake. That could be an upset alert, just a heads up. But I do feel confident with Wake, though, with that 2.5 points. Because if they're going to win, odds are they're going to win by 3, not just 1 in football. Any other, as far as the top 25 stuff, you know, as far as barn burners, there's a couple other games that I'll get to, but I don't know, man. There are some games where you just point to and you're just thinking, really? You think that's going to happen? Okay. I think it's going to be a better game than that. I wonder if – go ahead, actually. I'll let you go. Here it is. So BYU is a 17.5 point favorite over Liberty. Remember Liberty? I just got done talking about Liberty in that that quarterback who's got the fun name. And they got all these – boosters, and they want to become the Notre Dame of the South is what they call themselves, what they're trying to call themselves. Can they get beat by less than 17.5? Maybe. They might be able to do that. And then Appalachian State just lost for the first time. They're 7-1. They're traveling to South Carolina. South Carolina, 5-point favorite there. I think that could be interesting as well.
Yeah, I guess the last few comments before we get to the crappy pick of the week. It's hard to see that Washington State's playing Cal, and both teams are 1-4 in the conference. Man, for Cal, your season was looking glorious. Your offense is finally going. You're ranked. You just beat Ole Miss. Like the ceiling is like growing higher, and then your quarterback gets hurt, who for the first time in a couple of years was like leading your offense. And since then, it's been a disaster. And Washington State, man, you're playing good football. Like usual, Mike Leach has the ship going down the river. And then you give up 38 points in like 30 seconds. UCLA, now your season's over. So for two teams that were pretty promising this year, Chris, to see them both 1-4 in the standings, you know, for essentially the smartest offensive-minded coach in the Pac-12 and the smartest defensive coach in the Pac-12, I did not see them being 1-4 each facing off against each other. It should be a fun game to watch, but, man, what a tough season for both those fan bases for two teams who are probably, you know, for sure hoping for a bowl game. Now you got some work left to do to even make it there.
Yeah. And another team you can't trust is Miami, unfortunately. Which one shows up, I don't know. If they won out, they'd win the Coastal and go to the ACC and be 8-4, which, you know, considering how some of these early games started where coulda, woulda, shoulda, they could have been – have two less – they could be 10-2 this year if they won out. They also could go 2-2 down the stretch and nobody would even blink an eye. I say that because they're a six-point favorite at home against Louisville, who's not that bad of a club at all. They played some good teams as well, and at times have showed up. But here's back to that ACC Coastal. You have Virginia, which, funny enough, that's one of the best complete games Miami played. And they were ranked for a while, that, you know, of course, because it was a good team. They wanted to show out, you know. And they played good against their rival. But then other games they dropped. But they beat them. But in the Coastal, you got Virginia up top 4-2. Then you have Pitt 3-2. Then you have North Carolina and Miami at 3-3. And then you have Virginia Tech at 2-2. And you still have Duke at 2-3. So, I mean, it's the only one that's out of it is Georgia Tech, 1-4. And, oh, did I mention the Hurricanes lost to them? So they beat the best team in the Coastal and then lost to the worst team. That's inconsistent right there. So keep an eye out. In fact, that's my upset of the week, Louisville over Miami. 6 points they're giving Miami, who you can't trust them. The only thing you can trust them to do is come into the game with swagger, and if there's an interception, there's going to be a turnover chain. That's about it.
To knock out my quota quickly, Lane Kiffin is playing Florida International. I believe it's Butch Davis against Lane Kiffin in Boca Raton. Lane is 4-1 in Conference USA. Hey, Florida Atlantic,
I'm going with
they're
Butch,
minus 10.5.
I'm going with
Florida
Butch,
Atlantic's
baby.
Defense, they ain't that good. So I hope Kiffin wins. But, man, that 10.5 points in a Florida interstate battle,
that's
because
they got a real coach in there, Butch Davis. They got a real coach in there. That's why.
And it is the lock of the year. If you have like 20 or 30 grand to bet just on a crazy money line, Georgia's favored by 16. Mizzou will not beat them. Missouri never beats Georgia, ever. So, honestly, I would use them in a teaser. Tease Georgia's point spread from 16.5 down, tease it down 7 points, make them like a 10-point, 9-point favorite. Mizzou never beats Georgia. We've been crap this year in the big games. For once, I think Georgia's quarterback, Fromm, might have a good week. Every year, Missouri fans get up for Georgia, and every year they get smacked in the mouth. So Georgia's going to win next week. If Mizzou wins, I will bite my tongue and gladly start to show off with that happening. But I just don't see Missouri beating Georgia because it never freaking happens.
Well, there you have it. All right, I think that is the time of the show where we close it down with the crappy pick of the week, and we going into last week we were 6-3. And if this is your first time listening to the pod, basically Marshall right now has a game just cooking, just stirring the pot on a game right now. It's been on the back burner, just simmering all day long. And he's just gonna throw me a pick, and I gotta pick it.
All right. Well, and last week we had the Arkansas versus Mississippi State. Oh, boy.
The first matchup of the crappy pick of the week.
Rightfully so, because Arkansas got their butt kicked. Oh, my Lord, that was ugly. Jesus. I won't even – if you want to see the score, go look at it. It was nasty. Arkansas is a bad team this year. Do not bet Arkansas. Save your own money. Put it in a penny stock or something.
Well, too bad, man, because it all went down. Arkansas, their whole tradition all went down on a motorcycle ride. I'm just going to say that, okay? Motorcycle ride is what ruined Arkansas. People know what I'm talking about. A motorcycle ride in an affair. How about that? You know that Motorcycle Diaries, that movie Motorcycle Diaries? That could have been the Arkansas head coach documentary.
You actually shaved one off the off your money. You're actually 7-3 on the year. I appreciate you shaving the wins off your account. You're 7-3. Anyways, we have a beautiful matchup. We have the South Alabama Jaguars facing the Texas State Bobcats. I could go to this game if I wanted to. My girlfriend would probably kill me if she knew I was going to a shit football game instead of spending time with her. And, you know, tickets are like $24. I'm not going to lose much in the bank account for going to a good old Bobcat Stadium. This game is a 2 p.m. kickoff, okay? Again, Bobcat Stadium, they're not much of an original name. You're naming the stadium after your own team. The Texas State Bobcats are 2-6. South Alabama's 1-7. South Alabama's 0-4 in conference. Texas State's 1-4 in conference. So, you know, this is the bottom feeders division, not exactly pretty football. Now, we always like to compare mascot to mascot. If you throw a bobcat and a jaguar in a cage, I actually would pay money to probably see that and see who survives that more so than the football. I think that'd probably be a pretty good actual
I'm going bobcat. I think the all-purpose landscape that a bobcat has to be on, like mountains and foothills, I just think that gives them a little bit more than just a jaguar open field. I'm going to go get some.
And one reason to see why two of these teams sucked, in their last couple of games, granted, they were playing tougher teams. South Alabama scored 3 points last week. Texas State scored 3 points last week. Again, I didn't care about the opponent. 3 points is pretty bad. So we have two ferocious animals fighting against each other. I do not recognize any former NFL players due to last names like we had a couple of weeks ago. We had Blaine Gabbert's brother playing football who won the game for the Crafty Crack Pick of the Week. Blaine Gabbert or any other NFL quarterback, I don't see any names mentioned here. Chris, how do you see this beautiful matchup of the Texas State Bobcats hosting the South Alabama Jaguars?
Man, this one is a doozy. This one is one of the better ones because neither team is even close to 20 points on offense, which is tough to do nowadays. You're talking about 14.6 South Alabama, and to find it, it says USA. So you're like, where are we at? Oh, University of – oh, okay, cool. Okay, South – okay, got it. I was like, where is South Alabama? I can't fit all there. When you said 2 o'clock, I was finally like, oh, cool, okay, I can find the game. But you're sitting, you know, the visiting team 14.6, and then the home team 16. I mean, and they're both giving up 30 points. This is actually pretty damn even. Now, one can run the ball pretty damn well. That's the visiting South Alabama Jags. And one can't run the ball. They can pass there at the Bobcat. So what gives? Neither guy. Oh, my God. So they can't stop the run. Neither team. South Alabama's giving up 217 compared to 226, dude. Like, why even pass against these guys? You might as well just, even if you don't do the triple option, just for the week do the triple option and see what happens. Because, you know, a lot of these kids played it in high school anyway. I mean, this I like how you did the three thing, too. They both scored 3 points in their last game. Oh, God, that is rough, dude. And, you know, that 3 points came up. You know who that 3 points came up last week, though? The Raging Cajuns, baby.
Hell yeah.
Man.
Our team, our adopted son.
Man. This one's a doozy, dude. I am sitting on this one just tap dancing away. As much – oh, man. So the home team has been a theme, but when something strikes me as strange, I've been going to the road team because last year the road team – Last week I took the road team, right? The Bulldogs.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about some of these tight games, this is what I'm scratching my head with, okay? Some of these tight games that they had against Georgia Southern, okay, that was the only tight game. So they played Georgia Southern tight and that's it. Okay, damn, there goes my theory on that. Oh, gosh. It just I actually think they lost Georgia Southern in double overtime, but that team runs the shit out of the ball. Man. Sometimes you got to go out on a limb. You can't look at what Vegas says. You can't look at what ESPN says. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, 75.8, the home team, the Bobcats, Bobcat Stadium. Sometimes you just got to live on the edge. You got to go with a 1-7 team, even though that feels so weird to say. And I couldn't even see who the hell they are. I thought it was Conference USA. It's like USA. Oh, University of Southern. Okay. So I'm going with, even though I think the Jaguars in a Jaguar Bobcat would lose, you know, the mascot, I'm going out on the limb. And I'm picking up an upset. I'm going, even though it's really not an upset because these two teams are garbage. But I'm going away from the home theme, and I'm going with South Alabama. That's who I'm going with. The crafty pick of the week is really trying to live on the edge, dude. If I get to 8-3 and I pulled this one off, wow, this is going to be something else. And even in my voice, you can hear that people that have been following this and putting money on it, they probably like, you know what? He doesn't seem confident. I'm going to put the money on the home team. But they know it. They can hear it. So either way, they're going to get it right?
I always smile and laugh. You know, the only bad thing this year, normally we really get a joy out of what the stadium names are called. But this year, the stadium names of the games we picked were pretty lame. Like Bobcat Stadium.
Yeah, there's only been a couple good ones.
After your mascot. Yeah. We normally get like, you know, Jaeger Stadium or like Jeans. Or, I mean, the last couple of years we've had some doozies. But, oh well. Nonetheless, this is another beautiful show we've just done. We always appreciate all of our listens. Next week we'll have a huge game to talk about. No matter if LSU wins 60-3 or Bama wins 45-44, we're going to break that game down. Something's going to happen because the college football playoff poll comes out and those teams are going to play a huge factor in it because even if either lose, they're still not officially dead yet. So we'll have SEC talk, we'll have a Gopher victory talk, knock on wood, and we'll have more to talk about and guaranteed a Georgia win over Missouri. So until then, have a safe week with your family. Enjoy watching football during this fall weather. The boys are out. Have a good night. Peace.